Welcome back, Kirkwood, for another episode of the KPL podcast. Today, we're talking to local author Laurel K. Hamilton about her newest book, Sucker Punch,
part of the Anita Blake Vampire Hunter series. We'll also be discussing our favorite paranormal romance titles and what library programs you can enjoy in the following week.
And don't forget, summer reading is still going strong. You still have till the end of the month to log in those pages. Please go to kirkwoodpubliclibrary.org and click on Summer Reading. For this week's programming, we have three virtual programs for you. Our first one is Simple Ways to Boost Immunity on August 11th at 7 p.m. Are you interested in learning more about some key lifestyle habits you can employ to help strengthen your immunity? Then join us for a 60-minute presentation. This is a virtual programming and registration is required. Next up is Books on Tap for August 12th at 7 p.m., and they will be discussing the book This Tender Land by William Kent Kruger. And the last program for this week is The Book Club at the End of the Universe, and they will be discussing Severance by Ling Ma and the film Arrival with Amy Adams and Jeremy Renner. This is also a virtual program, so please register to get your Zoom link. August 13th at 7 p.m.
So, Kirkwood, do you have a passion for both fantasy and romance? Well, then you are in for a treat. Our guest today is none other than local New York Times bestseller, Laurel K. Hamilton. Her book, Sucker Punch, is the latest in the Anita Blake Vampire Hunter series, and it hits your Kirkwood Public Library and stores this week. Laurel, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you for having me, Ryan. It's great to be here. To be here via Zoom.
to be audio presently.
Yes. I think Zoom is becoming like a new secondary for everything these days.
Yeah, to go from never having heard of it to can't live without it, it's just the record time.
I think, isn't all technology like that? You go 1 week, you've never heard of it, and by, you know, a month, you're going, I don't know what I did without it.
Definitely. My iPhone. iPhone didn't exist 10 years ago, and suddenly it's like, oh, I can't live without that phone.
I was thinking the other day that I was going out just briefly out, and I thought, I don't have my phone with me. And I felt really like, oh my God, well, how will I call out if there's an emergency? And I thought, 10 years ago, I didn't have this. I lived just fine. But now you really do. You feel like you're missing something, like you're part of yourself at this point.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, so first question, Sucker Punch is this 27th title in the Anita Blake series. Without spoilers, could you tell us a little bit about the book?
Without spoilers, no.
Okay, then with spoilers.
What I mean is I am really bad at this. You'd think that I wouldn't, but I'd get more practice, but I have always been bad at describing something without giving too much away. So I will, without spoilers, I will do my best. Anita Blake, in her capacity as a U.S. Marshal for the Prudential Service, has been called in by another marshal to consult on a case. One of the interesting things with the marshal system in the Prudential branch is that it's really executioners with a badge. People that, will get mad at Anita over the course of the series, and they'll say, you're just assassins with a badge. And Anita goes, yes, we are, because they are not police officers. They are not there to solve a crime. They are not there. They are usually called in when there are bodies on the ground, people are already dead, and it is a vampire or a shapeshifter that has gone rogue. And even though they're legal citizens, they are deemed too dangerous to be put on trial or put in jail. The body count just adds up. So that is why warrants of execution exist. You have a crime, you have a warrant of execution, you go in and you end the danger by executing, by killing the person that is doing the crimes. But one of the things is, it makes perfect sense on one hand it's basically like if Superman were evil or if Captain America went evil and was completely out of control, what would you do with him? No cell could hold him. What would you do if somebody was that strong and that much faster and that much better and decided to go on a killing spree? How would you stop it? And so that's the idea behind it. But I wanted to explore what happens if you think somebody is abusing the system. So one of the other marshals calls Anita in because he thinks that somebody is trying to use it. And we start, first chapter, we start talking about it. He thinks somebody is using the system of the execution of warrants to frame somebody for murder. Because normally, the marshal that comes on scene, the person, if they know who the person is, and this is the person who did it, and the local police say this is it, then they execute the warrant and execute the person within hours. Not even days, just hours. They have, so it should have worked. If it is a frame up, it's perfect because the person who you have framed for the crime is dead before any, and nobody investigates. There's no evidence taken. It's just slam bang, we're done. But it didn't feel right to the other marshal. And he is one that we have seen before, but he is not one of her main people. We introduced him a few books back on his first hunt, monster hunt. He's 2 years older and 2 years more experienced, but he wanted her to come in and help him because he thinks somebody is trying to use him as a final murder weapon to commit two murders. The first one that they are framing the shapeshifter for, and then the shapeshifter themselves.
So the character of Anita Blake was introduced to us in Guilty Pleasures very nearly 30 years ago. Over the course of time, Anita has certainly evolved. Has it become easier to write Anita, or is it more challenging these days?
Anita writes really well and quickly for me because I'm so familiar with her voice. I fall into it. It's like your favorite. I don't know how to describe it. It is just something I've done for so long. It's like breathing for me. Writing is what I do, but writing Anita I've done, as you say, for some decades. So on one hand, it's really easy to get into her voice and her world. On the other hand, it is a challenge to make sure that you don't repeat yourself, that you don't go over old ground and you give the reader something new and give yourself as a writer something new. I'm one of those writers, I write to read. I write so I can read the story. I want to know what happens next too. I will have certain plot elements on a list as far as the mystery goes, but the in-between stuff, I kind of lie by the seat of my pants, so I want to read it too. And one of the things I use is, am I bored? If I'm bored, I back up and go, where did I lose control of this? What happened? She's very easy to write, but coming up with plots that explore the world and say something new. This is the most actual police work, like clues and having to question witnesses that Anita, I think, has ever done. Mm-hmm. It's the 27th book and is the most of what a real officer would do if they had to see a violent crime. And I think she's ever done. And in fact, in one scene, she opens a drawer and there is a weapon and she's going and she starts to touch it. And then she goes, I don't know if I touch it, will that taint the evidence in case we go to trial? And she actually has to flag one of the other officers. And so can I touch that? Cause she doesn't know. That's not what she does. It was actually fun to have Anita have to question, can I touch this? Will I ruin the chain of evidence? Cause she doesn't usually have to worry about it. It was very interesting to me as both a writer and from her perspective as a character to watch her have to navigate a more typical way of dealing with crime.
Nice. So my next question actually kind of flows into what you just said. So what inspired Sucker Punch to kind of go more crime and police procedural oriented?
It was something that we hadn't done. And I keep a running list of things. I have a list of supernatural or folklore myths to want to tie in. I have a list of characters if you haven't seen them on the stage in much, or if you haven't explored certain parts of their character, I have a list for that. And I also have a list of crimes, anything. I keep separate lists of what we've already done, and then I have a list of what haven't we done. And one of the things that's been on for a while is police procedural, real police procedural. And normally it's just like, what set of circumstances would give that to me? What set of circumstances makes that logical? And I finally came up with one. And And also, it was very interesting to have Anita isolated from the people she usually is with. To have her out with just another officer that she's not best friends with. It's not, you know, Marshal Ted Forrester Edward. It's somebody that she's met a few times, and she's sort of more a mentor. And to watch her be on her own more than we've gotten to be in a long time in the books was very interesting. I really enjoyed it. So what inspired me? The idea of having her be out there on her own like this for a while has been on the list of things I'd like to see about doing in the books. And the police procedural has been on the list of trying to do. And suddenly I had an idea and I went, oh, that idea and this idea will cross, and you rub them together and you get a book. Instead of rubbing them together, you know, sticks and getting a fire, you rub the inspiration together and you get a book.
That's nice.
Thank you.
With 27 books of material, which doesn't even begin to include Anita's short stories and novellas, how do you keep all these complex characters and narratives and worlds organized?
Poorly. I mean, it's hard. It's hard. I mean, I keep them organized, but if it is a character that is on stage a lot, if it is one that Anita is best friends with or in love with or whatever, I don't forget what they look like. It's like your best friend. You know what your best friend looks like. Mm-hmm. But if it's a character that hasn't been on stage much, or hasn't been on stage in a few books, or is not a main character, part of the cast, I have to go back and look it up again. Because if I don't, I get the things where, I don't know why I do this, but I now know I do this, so I double and triple check. If a character is short, they will get shorter by an inch in some books. If a character is very tall, they will get taller by an inch or two in some books. And if nobody catches it, you have a range. Now, if you're a middle size, if you're an average size person, 5'8", 5'9", something like that, that stays the same. I don't know why, but on the two extreme ends of height, if I don't double check it, I will change the height by an inch or two. The other thing is eye color. If I haven't written somebody in a long time, sometimes I go, did they have brown eyes or blue eyes? Was it gray? So things like that, if they're not a main character, I do have to double check. But then I finally realized, if I haven't seen somebody for a while and they aren't a close friend, I don't remember what everybody's eye color is. Do you?
No, really.
I'm not entirely sure I could tell you my best friend's eye color. and I'm iffy on my own, to be honest.
I remember people's hair color, and I remember people's, you know, are they taller than me? Are they shorter than me? It's very hard to find shorter than me. Let me just say that. If they're above a certain height, it's just kind of vague for me. And I finally realized it's not just characters. This is how I see the world. It was kind of disconcerting. As a writer, you think you're observant. You think that you notice things, to realize just how much I didn't notice physically about people I interact with. Unless somebody has extraordinary eyes or has some physical characteristic that stands out, if I go to the grocery store or wherever I'm out, I don't notice the details that I need to notice when I write and I'm describing somebody for you. So that was interesting to finally realize that it's in real life and not just my characters.
Do you find that fans will sometimes call you on it and say, hey, this is...
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Because the fans have read the books. My hat is off to my fans. They are the best fans. Because this is book 27. And there are some of them that start rereading from the beginning for every book. So I am hearing from so many people that started at Guilty Pleasures and they read all the way through. Somebody else was going, I'm just finishing up Serpentine. I'm almost ready for, you know, Sucker Punch. And I mean, that's an amazing amount of dedication. But then they will say that some people have read the series all through 12 times, 20 times. Some people read their favorites like 25 times, 40 times. And they're going to get details I've forgotten because I don't reread my books. I will reread specific books if there's a character I haven't had on stage in a while. And the last book, I'll go back and reread the last book they were in. Or I'll read their introduction and the last book they were in. I'm not going to go back and read the whole series every time before every book. I don't have the time. I can't write and do that. Right. So the fans, yes, they call me out. I'm dyslexic. And I didn't know I was dyslexic. I wasn't diagnosed until my 40s. So I just thought I couldn't spell. Now, when my daughter was diagnosed, I got diagnosed, and her doctor said that's very common. She was actually very impressed that I was a novelist as my living. So I can't always, I finally realized that on names, if character names are similar enough, I don't always notice that they aren't right. And the most infamous one is Vivian and Vanessa. The original name was Vivian. It got changed to Vanessa for one book. And now it is the wondering girlfriend of Stephen, whether she's Vanessa or Vivian, depends on the book. It should be Vivian. But by the time I put that book in, I didn't see the difference, or I had forgotten the difference. Foreign names, I have to double check a lot because on spelling. And I'm going to actually have my husband, who's not dyslexic, just go in and do all the vocabulary, put it into the spell check on the new program so that the spell check will do it, because I do not dare put in the spelling of a word that I'm unsure of, because once I put it into the dictionary thinks I'm right, and then it won't catch me again. But fans catch it all. They catch it all. They know the heights, the eye color, everything, and they know if I switched it. They absolutely know. They're great at catching stuff like that because they've read it so many times.
Very thorough.
They're very thorough.
Being librarians, this is one of our all-time favorite questions. What are you reading right now, or what should we be reading right now?
I am reading Carolyn Knapp, K-N-A-P-P, Pack of Two, The Intricate Bond Between People and Dogs.
Oh, that sounds very interesting.
It actually very, very much is. She talks about the fact that why have we gone from 10 years ago when we didn't have cell phones or smart iPhones, why back then were we, dogs were more, you know, they were the family pet, but we didn't have dog beds shaped like race cars and, boutique stores, at least not here in the Midwest, I don't think 10 years ago. And why has this sudden attention? Why? And she makes the point in the book that I thought was very well made, and that is that it's the transient nature of society now. We used to stay in the same towns. We used to be near family. We used to have a best friend in high school. We stayed in the same area, and we would have the same best friend all the way through our life. You know, we'd be in the same area. But now, because of so many of us moving so frequently, many, many of us are in areas where we have no family, and our friends were back the last place we moved, and we will move several places in our lifetime, change jobs in our lifetime. A dog is not going to stay behind because he has a different job. They are not going to stay behind. They are not going to stay. They come with you. And dogs more and more feel that need of permanence of relationships that we are losing because we keep moving all over the place. And I thought that was a really good point, one I hadn't thought of before. I like books that make me think outside of the box that I've been thinking of. Now, what should you be reading? One, I have been frequently reading through Terry Pratchett during this lockdown, or whatever we're calling it now. Mm-hmm. Terry Pratchett is a fantasy writer, and he is, before he passed away, he was Sir Terry Pratchett, by the way, because he's British. It is just a fun world. It's a fun read. It is ridiculous. It is funny and silly. And the current book that I just finished for him is Guards, Guards. And in it, you have a noble lady that has a dragon rescue, because people get little shoulder dragons. And then, of course, they don't want them anymore after a while because they're hard to keep. And so she has a rescue, a noble one. She has a rescue for little shoulder dragons. You know, one of the main characters in the book is a 6'4" young man who got raised by dwarves. He thought he was a dwarf that had just gotten really big until they explained it to him at 16. I mean, it's just things that you put everything together and there's magic. It's just fun. And I don't know about you, but I needed some nonsensical fun. And so I would recommend trying Terry Pratchett's Discworld series. If you want a young adult, he's also got a young adult series that has like three or four books in, the Tiffany Aching books. First book is The We Free Men. That one was absolutely charming. I don't know. I could wax eloquent about Terry Pratchett. I've read a few books, but I had not read all his books. And I was looking around while we were all doing what we're doing here this year, and I thought, I need something light. I need something that will make me laugh.
Well, I was going to say, and if I may lean in, I completely agree. I enjoy Terry Pratchett. I think also his book that he wrote with Neil Gaiman, Good Omens, has been one of my all-time favorite books. And he is a delight. Very funny author.
Yes, and it's just kind of a balm for the heart right now that you need. I seem to be wildly swinging between wanting humor and that kind of lightness that Terry Pratchett is so wonderful at in his writing, and also something that makes me think deeply about things that I don't normally think, like Pack of Two by Carolyn Knapp. I just finished reading Pitbull by
maybe by Dickey? Bronwyn Dickey?
Yes, thank you. Yes, Bronwyn Dickey. It is one of the best researched, most thoroughly researched pieces of nonfiction I have read in years. I was incredibly impressed by her level of dedication, both in finding books and articles and interviews on the idea of Pitbull as the American icon and how it went from being a beloved family pet in the early days of the 1900s to what we think of it today. It was incredibly, incredibly well-written, well-researched, and I am a huge sucker for a good bibliography. And she certainly does that. And from her, actually, Pack of Two was one of the books she recommended as part of her bibliography, but I already had it on my shelves in my to-be-read pile. So I thought, well, I'll move you up to the front. That is, I love that. I love when books recommend other books to me. That
very nice. So are you, do you have dogs then? Seems like you're a dog lover.
I am an animal person. So yes, we have dogs. Right now we have two Japanese chins. They're both rescues. We have had them for quite some time. I'm really missing, when we got them, we had pugs. I have gone pugless for the longest in my adult life. I've had pugs since I was in my 20s, and I'm really missing the little snuffle face. Yeah, I'm a dog person, but I actually, thanks to allergy shots of over a decade, I now have cats for the first time as an adult. And I've wanted cats since I was 5, so my inner 5-year-old is very happy. The cats are all rescues as well, and they are charming and wonderful, and they both come to their name. I don't know where people get that they don't. I keep running into cats that know their names. We have four animals right now, four pets, two dogs, two cats.
So how would our listeners learn more about Laurel K. Hamilton?
You can go to my website, which is www.laurelkhamilton.com. So you can know what the books are in order, and you know where I'm going to be, and interviews and things like this. You can also find me on social media. I on Facebook and on Instagram, and I'm on Twitter. Twitter is the one where I'm more likely to be the person that's actually on the other side of the screen from you, because you go in and you get out quickly. It's not, it's 140 characters or less. Get in, get out.
So it's not a commitment.
I'm not distracted from my writing. I post to social media quite a bit, actually. I'm quite active on that. And then on Instagram, oh my God, the photos, the nature photos. The photos are so pretty. I could just, that is the danger for me for procrastination online. That is my crack if I decide to procrastinate online, going through all the pretty pictures on Instagram of animals and stuff. So if you want to see me, Instagram, Facebook, on Twitter, I am LK Hamilton. because my actual name was held by somebody else and I wouldn't pay the ransom to get it. So I'm LK Hamilton on Twitter.
I'm actually trying to find you here on Instagram, because Instagram is definitely my crack. I get addicted and I follow a lot of authors.
Underline LK Hamilton on Instagram.
Oh, yep. Gotcha.
All right. So we're going to move towards the outro here. But before we do, was there anything else you'd like to say?
Anything I'd like to say? Well, I'm always reminded by my agent to say things like, Sucker Punch comes out August 4th. I really enjoyed writing it, and I hope that everyone enjoys reading it. I finished it just before we all went into lockdown. And then, you know, I'd been isolated in my office for weeks, and I was had all these lists of things I was going to do. We were going to go to the ocean, and then everything happened. And so, and I edited it back and forth with technology and everything with New York, but everybody was scattered. So it was a very interesting experience. And I actually dedicated the book to everybody because we were in lockdown. Nothing else had happened. It was before everything else happened. And I dedicated it to all of us, to all the readers, to everybody that was in lockdown. That's who I dedicated it to. And I'm sharing my stories. I wish I had a magic wand to keep us all safe and help us all feel better, get better, be safe. But since I don't have a magic wand, I give a book and I share a story. Because those of us who love books, that is a type of magic. And it's a type of magic we can hold in our hands, which I think is a Neil Gaiman quote, actually, speaking of good omens. Writing is a type of magic you can hold in your hands. That is
wonderful sentiment.
It really is. And for those of us who have been in love with words and books are since we could read, it really is that type of camaraderie. It really does bring us together and unite us, the stories that we love.
Our guest today was Laurel K. Hamilton. Her latest book, Sucker Punch, and previous titles are available at your Kirkwood Public Library and wherever books are sold. Laurel, it was such a pleasure to speak with you today. Thank you for joining us.
Oh, thank you guys for having me. It's been wonderful, and I hope to be able to walk into the library in person soon. That's my hope soon.
Yes, that would be great. Love to see you.
It would. I will see you after.
We look forward to that date.
So we just talked to Laurel K. Hamilton about her book, Sucker Punch. And so Ryan and I thought it'd be fun to talk about other paranormal romance type books and TV shows.
Indeed. So what do you recommend, Jagisha?
Well, I'm going to talk about two authors that fall into a similar genre as Laurel K. Hamilton. My first author is Patricia Briggs, and she writes the Mercedes Thompson series. And this is about shapeshifters. So we've got Mercedes Thompson, who is a Volkswagen mechanic and a coyote shapeshifter.
Those two things go together like peanut butter and jelly.
Absolutely. It's an interesting combination. The book is set in the Seattle area, and she lives near a werewolf pack, and they tend to stick their nose into her business sometimes. She's also got vampires and ghosts and various other supernatural creatures that invade her life. Mercedes herself is very curious and tends to stick her nose into places too. So that leads to a great deal of trouble for her. So this series is a lot of fun to read. There's also the Fae involved, so you got to know that that's got to have lots of shenanigans happening.
Always a good choice in paranormal romances.
Paranormal,
period.
Yes, I agree. So, and she happens to, as the series goes on, she happens to develop a relationship with the alpha of the werewolf pack. I really enjoy this series. I've read quite a few of the books in the series. I'm a little behind right now, but the library has them, and I highly recommend them.
Neat. So I'd like to recommend the TV series Pushing Daisies. This was kind of a comedy romance that aired on ABC. It stars Lee Pace as Ned the Pie Maker, and as a young child, Ned discovers that he has a supernatural ability when he touches something that is deceased, it comes back to life, and if he touches that individual again, they return to death permanently. His secret gets discovered by Emerson Codd, who is a private investigator who's played by Shy McBride.
Emerson decides that it would be so much easier to solve mysteries if he could ask the victim who killed them. And so basically they kind of go into business together, solving crimes. Also at the same time, Anna Friel plays Chuck. She is Ned's childhood crush that he's never gotten over. And she lives essentially a cloistered existence with her aunts. And she wins a cruise. And on her first outing into the world, she is murdered. And when Ned and Emerson go to investigate, Ned brings her back to life, but decides that he's not going to return her to death. And she joins their team. And it is an adorable romance from the perspective that Ned and Chuck still love each other, but they can't touch. Otherwise, Chuck will die. It's got a fantastic supporting cast. Christian Chenoweth is in there, and she's just amazing. And all in all, it's a visually beautiful television show. Basically, kind of an embodiment of whimsy. It's kind of like a
Tim Burton swallowed rainbows.
Yes, if Tim Burton swallowed rainbows. That's a wonderful way of putting it. Yeah, if Tim Burton's medium wasn't such darkness, instead it was color, then this would feel like that. All the sets are kind of designed to seem like a model or just kind of like a kind of whimsy. But it's a really fun show, and I highly recommend it. It's called Pushing Daisies, and it had two seasons, and both are available through your Kirkwood Public Library.
Yeah, I have seen, I think, an episode or two, and yes, it is very bright and beautiful scenery. So, got a question for you. When someone gets revived, like when a murder victim is revived, is there ever an episode where the person didn't see them, like they were hit from behind or something like that?
Oh, yeah, yeah. That stuff like that comes up quite a bit, actually, where they don't know, and so doesn't help them, or something happens and Ned gets bumped and they return him to death before they can get their answer. There's a lot of MacGuffins that run through the course of that show.
I could imagine. Or if someone is brought back to life and they don't want to die again, so they run away. And
yeah, and that in and of itself has complications in the show, so I won't give that away. But another thing that I wanted to point out why I think that show is really good is that it also has a narrator who is done by Jim Dale. And fans of the Harry Potter audiobooks will recognize that I think he did all of them. But he's a fabulous narrator, and he does such a good job holding your interest.
Very nice. My next recommendation is another author, and her name is Sherilyn Kenyon. And her series is the Dark Hunter series.
Mm-hmm.
The series because she brings back the Greek gods. So it's like getting the Greek tragedies back. So she's got all these gods, and they're causing mischief for humans. But also brings gods from other pantheons, so like the Titans, the Sumerians. A lot of those gods are also fighting against the Greek gods, and there's a lot of conflict between the different groups.
Is not the Titans also part of the Greek pantheon?
Well, what happened was that the Greek gods came along and they killed off the Titans, if I remember correctly.
I believe they're the parents, aren't they?
The parents, but I think they also killed them off because the Greek gods wanted to rule, if I know my Greek mythology correctly.
I believe you're correct.
It's essentially a vampire series, but the vampires don't drink blood in this series. They actually feed on life forces. And so they can kill a human and basically take their souls. And that's how they survive through life. And some of them are good guys and there's bad guys. And some feel really horrible that they have to survive this way. So they try to only kill bad humans. And so there's lots of fun with gods and vampires and supernatural creatures thrown in.
That sounds like a lot of fun.
It is. And it's such a, what's different about her series compared to say the Anita Blake series is that each book is a different couple. So they're all romances too. So she has characters that are in throughout the books because there is a running plot line.
Mm-hmm.
There is also a specific plot just for that particular book. And then they move on to a different couple.
Interesting. So what you're saying is there's no primary protagonist. They basically kind of, it's like an ensemble with the focus being on someone else.
Exactly. It is an origin story for the Dark Hunters and also how they find love.
Well, interesting. You don't see that in series a lot. Most series, it's been my impression that there is a primary character and then a supporting cast, and that's just the way it is going through.
I think it's because there's the romantic element. So a lot of paranormal romance authors do this. So they will have a group You know, so like a wolf pack would be an example. So the first book might have the alpha falling in love and finding his love match, and then they move on to like the next people, or they move on to the other wolves in the pack kind of thing. So it depends and it varies. So you get both. I mean, you can get both. So you can get the Anita Blake type or you can get the Charlaine Kenyon type.
Well, that's cool. That's cool. I'll have to check them out.
Okay. What do you have? I know you have one more.
I do. You are correct. So this one's not a romance, but in keeping with kind of a vampire theme, I wanted to recommend What We Do in the Shadows, the FX TV show. I have on previous episodes of the podcast had recommended the movie that it is based upon as being my favorite vampire film. But the TV show is excellent in its own right as well. It's got an all-star cast. It's pretty funny. It stars, just a whole lot of people, but like Matt Berry's in there and he's one of my favorite British comedians. I'm definitely going to get her name wrong, but Natasha Demetria, she's in there as well. And she's just fantastic, quickly becoming one of my favorites. Anytime her character is on screen, it's just hilarious. She does such a good job and is quickly one of my favorite characters. And second season recently finished airing on FX, and it's just as good, if not better, than the first. And you can check out the first at the Kirkwood Public Library, and in time, I'm sure the second as well. But the basic premise of the show, which I don't think I've touched on here, is it's basically about our four vampires who are roommates. They've been here since, you know, America was a new country, and they're all kind of generally clueless. It's a comedy. They just don't quite understand how modern day society fully works and all the foibles of being like a cliche vampire in a modern setting.
Oh, that sounds really good, because I know often when I read vampire series, usually the vampire has adapted very quickly to modern life, and so it'd be interesting to see how what happens if the vampires as they grow older just don't adapt.
Yeah, it's treated very silly. So like there'll be an example where I think Matt Berry's character wants to get a beer to pretend that he's a human. So he'll say, you know, something like, I'll take a human man beverage, please. You know, something to that effect.
Nice.
Give me one human beer.
There's no vampire beer. So.
No, they drink something else. In the episode where they kind of lean heavy on that, Mark Hamill guest starred, which I think is one of my favorite episodes of that series. Another fine example why Mark Hamill is one of my favorite actors. He's not just for Luke Skywalker's or Joker's. He can pretty much do anything.
Yes, he can. And I love him as Joker and as Luke Skywalker. So I'm sure if I watch this, I'll probably enjoy this too.
It's a good show. It's called What We Do in the Shadows.
Well, there you have it, Kirkwood. That was our list of recommendations for paranormal romance, both books and TV shows. Let us know what you think. Please leave a comment. And if you have recommendations, then also let us know that too.
Yeah, share your favorites.
Well, another fantastic episode is now in the books. Just time to thank our special guest, Laurel K. Hamilton, for joining us to talk about her newest book, Sucker Punch. And how about we go out with words from Count Dracula himself, Mr. Bela Lugosi. I have never met a vampire personally, but I don't know what might happen tomorrow. Thank you, Kirkwood. We'll see you next week.